Macmillan Audio presents How Firm a Foundation by David Weber. Read for you by Charles Keating. February, Year of God, 895. 1. Castaway Islands, Great Western Ocean. Imperial Palace, City of Chiraeth, Kingdom of Chisholm, and Edward Huysman's study, Delthach, Kingdom of Old Caris. Nights didn't come much darker, Merlin Athrys reflected as he stood gazing up at the cloud-choked, stormy sky. There were no stars and no moon through those clouds, and although it was summer in Safehold's southern hemisphere, the castaway islands were almost 4,000 miles below the equator on a planet whose average temperature was rather lower than old Terra's to begin with. That made summer a purely relative term, and he wondered again how the islands had come to be named. There were four of them, none of which had ever been individually named. The largest was just under 250 miles in its longest dimension. The smallest was barely 27 miles long, and aside from a few species of Arctic wyverns and the seals, which actually resembled the Terran species of the same name, which used their limited beaches, he had seen no sign of life anywhere on any of them. He could well believe that any ship which had ever approached the barren, steep-sided volcanic peaks rising from the depths of the Great Western Ocean had managed to wreck themselves. What he couldn't figure out was why anyone would have been in the vicinity in the first place, and how there could have been any surviving castaways to name the islands afterward. He knew they hadn't been named by the terraforming crews which had first prepared Safehold for human habitation. He had access to Pei Shan Wei's original maps, and these miserable hunks of weather and wind-lashed igneous rock, sand, and shingle bore no name on them. There were still quite a few unnamed bits and pieces of real estate scattered around the planet, actually, despite the detailed atlases which were part of the holy writ of the Church of God awaiting. There were far fewer than there'd been when Shan Wei and the rest of the Alexandria enclave were murdered, though, and he found it fascinating, in a historical sort of way, to see which of them had been christened only after dispersion had started shifting the colonists' descendants' standard English into Safehold's present dialects. He wasn't here to do etiological research on planetary linguistics, however, and he turned his back to the howling wind and examined the last of the emitters once more. The device was about half his own height and 4 feet across, a mostly featureless box with a couple of closed access panels, one on each side. There were quite a few other similar devices, some quite a bit larger, most about the same size or smaller, scattered around the four islands, and he opened one of the panels to study the glowing LEDs. He didn't really have to do it, of course. He could have used his built-in comm to consult the artificial intelligence known as Owl, who was actually going to be conducting most of this experiment anyway. And he didn't really need the LEDs either. The storm-lashed gloom was daylight clear to his artificial eyes. There were some advantages to having been dead for 1,000 standard years or so, including the fact that his pika body was immune to little things like hypothermia. He'd come to appreciate those advantages more deeply in many ways than he ever had when a living, breathing young woman named Nimu Alban had used her pika only occasionally, which didn't keep him from sometimes missing that young woman with an aching, empty need. He brushed that thought aside, not easily, but with practiced skill, and closed the panel with a nod of satisfaction. Then he crunched back across the rocky flat to his recon skimmer, climbed the short ladder, and settled into the cockpit. A moment later, he was rising on counter-grav, turbines compensating for the battering wind as he climbed quickly to 20,000 feet. He broke through the overcast and climbed another 4,000 feet, then leveled out in the thinner.